Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Join me today as I talk with Sika Henry, who just established the first Selma to Montgomery FKT. Hear how Sika's journey to become the first Black female professional triathlete also led her to run this historic route in just over 7 hours. Learn how her personal ties to Alabama, Martin Luther King Jr.'s mission, and the impact of segregation on professional sports made this FKT even more meaningful. Today's episode is brought to you by Jonji. Jonji trail tights and shorts have pockets and a moisture-wicking, body-hugging fit to support your longest adventure. Shop now at jonji.com with code FKT for 10% off. Thank you, Sika, so much for coming on the show today. I'm really excited to chat with you about your Selma to Montgomery FKT.
Thanks. Yeah, it's still so fresh. It just happened on Saturday, so I'm excited to chat about it as well.
Yeah. How are the legs? Are you walking okay? Or are stairs still a challenge?
I actually went for my first run today. I ran 5 miles.
Nice. That's awesome. That seems like a pretty quick recovery.
Yeah, it is. Surprisingly, like other races, I've done Comrades in South Africa and I've done 100K, and it took a really long time actually to recover from those. So maybe my coach and I have found the secret to recovering now, because this is by far the fastest I've recovered.
Well, that's good. Hopefully you did find the magic formula. That's always nice to know. So I would love it, actually, if you could give our listeners a little introduction to the Selma to Montgomery route that you did. Like, as far as, you know, what the elevation change is, the surface you're running on, how far it is. Just paint a picture for us.
So it starts in Selma. So I flew out to Alabama. We drove from Montgomery to Selma, and it's the route that Martin Luther King Jr. and other peaceful activists took on their march from Selma to Montgomery. And it was to basically protest and ask for, you know, basic civil rights for Blacks to be able to vote in this country. And it was only 59 years ago. A lot of people hear Dr. MLK and segregation and everything, and they think it was so long ago, and it actually wasn't. We see these pictures, black and white and everything, and it just really seems like centuries ago. And so that's what appealed to me about coming out and seeing the route. And it is purely on pavement. I'm sure it was different from them back then. And maybe it was dirt and stuff, but for us, it was all pavement the whole way. You are on US 80. So if you've ever done something like a Ragnar relay where you're running on the highway on the shoulder, that's what it was. Luckily, everybody, the cars were really respectful and went into another lane. But I ran on US 80 for the first about 42 miles, and then you turn off US 80, and then you're on regular streets. And then it ends at the state capitol. So the last, I guess, 3 miles are like directly in the city of Montgomery. It's very hilly. So don't
that's
be
surprising.
Fooled.
Like, for whatever reason, I just figured this would be very flat.
Oh, so did I. But as I got closer to it, I didn't do my homework on it that much. No, miles 21 through 31 are actually pretty treacherous. It just goes up and down the whole way. Pretty steep hills. Luckily, I've done some other crazy things, so I didn't see it as unsurmountable. But no, it was very hilly. And also, there's no hint of shade anywhere. It's completely exposed. I started at 6:30 a.m., so still dark outside, which is great. It started at about 60 degrees, and then it gradually heated up to about 75 degrees. Luckily, the sun didn't come out until I was around mile 40. But once the sun came out, it got pretty bad.
I mean, when you're on pavement, too, there's so much radiant heat. So even if the air temperature is 80, you might be almost 100 on the pavement where you're running. So
exactly. Yeah, it feels a lot worse than it is.
Yeah. One of the things that was interesting to me is that you did this in the context of a race, like a relay race.
Mm-hmm.
But you did it as an FKT, and you also had some additional support from your parents. So, I mean, I've done a Ragnar relay, so I kind of have a sense of like what that's like. But can you talk about what it was like to be like, did you sign up for the race and then just compete as an individual running all the legs? Can you just kind of talk about how that played out?
Regarding registration, yes, that's exactly how it was. I just pretty much signed up as a relay, but as one person. But I knew right away when I heard about the event that I wanted to experience the whole route, you know, and this isn't a knock on anybody who did the relay and was in the car and stuff, but I really wanted to take in that entire route, see all of the major markers along the way. You know, there's a statue of Rosa Parks, and I just didn't want to miss out on anything. I would say it just, and I talked to other people who did the rally, it's not really, it doesn't feel like a race at all. It really feels like an experience. It's very personal. You know, you're out there, and usually when I start feeling fatigue, I want it to be over and I want it to end. And while, yes, I wanted to even get to the state capitol, I also didn't really want it to end. It was just such a unique experience of reliving history and, you know, being on that famous Edmund Pettus Bridge of where it started and the different campsites where they, because it took them more than one day to march, seeing that along the route and everything. So that's why I decided to do it solo. And I knew right away that I wanted to make the trek.
Why did you choose to do it as an FKT?
I feel like certain things don't get enough attention. And I wanted to draw attention to the event, especially the historical aspects of it. You know, we hear about Appalachian Trail and those other really popular routes. I'm learning even now after the fact that people don't really know about Selma. You know, they might have heard the movie, I think it came out like 2 years ago, or, you know, you hear about Martin Luther King Jr. and that famous walk, but people don't necessarily tie it to the stretch from Selma to Montgomery and how these far these people walked. Like, I had privileged and I had my Garmin and I had my Hoka shoes and I had my parents giving me Coke when I was bonking, and like, they didn't have that, and they were being, you know, flogged by state troopers, tear gas, everything. So I really wanted to bring attention specifically to that route. And I thought by applying for the FKT and then chasing a time that people in the running community would at least see that and become more interested in what that was about.
I mean, I think that they will. I think that it's that's a great avenue for bringing attention to it. Absolutely.
I will say the funny thing is when I first decided to do it, so I was deciding between, I found out about it last year, and I had just done it 100K, my first 100K, and it was pretty quick. I had actually broke the state record and stuff. And so I was trying to decide between doing the 100K US Championships, which are next month, to see if I qualify for the team, or doing this event. And this event isn't USATF certified course, so I knew it wouldn't count. And so I'd actually reached out to the race director. I was like, hey, can you get this course certified? Can we put down a timing mat at like mile 50 so I can try to qualify? And now and he said no. And now I see why. It's not like some certified course or anything. It truly is an experience. And I think that would have taken away from the importance of the route.
I'd love it if you could talk a little bit more. You've mentioned, you know, the historical landmarks and points along the way that you wanted to experience. And, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of people don't know all of these places. And I was just wondering if you could describe a few of the more memorable ones, or if there were any that were really personally impactful to you.
I think, well, first starting on the bridge, because that's something that you see a lot of pictures and in the movies and everything. So to actually be standing on the bridge at the start, I would also say there was a prayer spot, and I really just thanked God for my health and for the fact that I can vote and for everything that my ancestors did on that day so that I have these civil rights. Which other marks? I see a lot of the famous Baptist churches, they're still there. So every time I saw one of those, and there are a lot, 20 churches along the way. And then really the turn when you see the Rosa Parks statue and then you see the state capitol, and that's where they ended. Yeah. So those are the ones that really stuck out the most to me. And then every time I saw my parents, because they were at each exchange zone, which was, I want to say every like 6 miles or so. So being able to see them and kind of just celebrate each moment together along the way. My dad's side of the family is actually from Alabama. So that's why they came too. My grandfather, he was a world-class football player when he was younger, but he couldn't play in the NFL because of segregation. And he always said that he couldn't imagine the day where Blacks could play professional sports. And that's something that really stood out to me that my dad told me growing up. And he actually, because he couldn't play in the NFL, he got into music and he was inducted into the Alabama Jazz Hall of Fame. So that was another major thing down there for us. And then my Aunt Mabel, who was his sister, she was the lead organist at the 16th Street Baptist Church that was bombed by the Ku Klux Klan back in, I want to say, 1903. So yeah, we have a lot of deep roots there. So like for me, representation and being Black in a non-diverse sport is something that drives me.
Yeah, absolutely. What did you have your parents talk to you a little bit about, like, how did they feel about this? Have they talked to you about it? Like, what it was like for them?
Yeah, it at first. So I'm actually getting married in 2 weeks.
Oh my goodness! Congratulations. So,
thank you. My mother thought it was crazy because getting married in 2 weeks. She's like, "Do you really think you need to be running 51 miles on the pavement and in the heat? Like, we need to be preparing for this wedding." And I'm like, "No, I have to do this." But after I finished, she actually said, out of all the races and events I've done like, I don't know, 200, maybe 300 plus races, because I'm also a professional triathlete. So, you know, I've done Kona. My parents have come to the JFK 50 with me, and they've been at all my races all over the place. But she actually said this was the most special one. I'm not exactly sure why she felt that way. I think maybe she felt a connection to it also. And then my dad with his roots to the event. So they love the day. They love being part of it. They even thanked me for including them, which is good because usually they're like, oh, let's just hurry up and get this over with and go back to our normal lives. So yeah, they enjoyed it.
It's really cool that you could involve them in something that was important to you and also, you know, important to them and part of, like, you know, your personal histories. So that's a really amazing thing to share.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, usually when I go do triathlons and stuff, they say their heart is in their mouth because the bike leg and stuff and the danger and all this other stuff. So yeah, they're like, no, this one was pretty awesome.
Yeah, you were just on your own 2 feet this time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Actually, I would love to hear a little bit more about, because I was on your website and kind of reading about you before this, and like it seemed like you have a lot of similar motivations, like why you did this FKT, but also with how you became a professional triathlete. And like, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your journey there and your motivations for becoming the first Black woman to be a professional triathlete.
Sure. Yeah, I feel like that's such a big part of my story. So I did my first triathlon in 2013. I was going through a really bad breakup, divorce, wasn't getting out of the bed, didn't want to go to work, didn't want to do anything with my life at the time. I felt like my life was over, actually. It was really depressing. And I knew I needed to do something to distract myself and get out again. And I always wanted to do a triathlon. It was on my bucket list because I grew up swimming. I did track and field in college, and I knew all I needed to do was get a bike. So I happened to go online and Google, and lucky me, there was a triathlon right in my hometown, like right near Hampton, and it was in 2 weeks. So I had 2 weeks to prepare for my first triathlon.
Oh my gosh.
Luckily, it was a sprint. It wasn't an Ironman or anything like that.
Okay, okay.
Like just a sprint. I bought a mountain bike. I bought some goggles. I got membership to the local swim club, and I kind of just did my thing. And then I went out there, and I was like one of the last people to cross the finish line, but it was so much fun. Like, I absolutely loved it. You know what it's like in the beginning, like before you ever do a marathon or anything, like the unknown, you don't have a PR or things that you're chasing. It's like the simple act of completing feels so good. And so that really got me out of my funk. But something I noticed that day also was that I was one of the only Black people out there, and there were a lot of people. And so I'm like, why are there no, you know, Black people? I know people say, oh, I don't see color and blah, blah, blah. I do. I see color. And yeah, I looked it up, and I saw that less than 1% of African Americans were in the sport of triathlon. There had never been a professional Black female triathlete before. And you know, when I saw these things, I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to be the first pro or anything like that. But I found it fascinating. And so I got more and more into the sport. I also saw the statistics, like with why we are not as prevalent in the sport, like 65% of African Americans lack basic swim skills. And the rate of us drowning is much higher. And a lot of that has to do with segregation back then, where we couldn't go use the same pools. And so we'd go to, you know, creeks or rivers, and we didn't have a lifeguard. And so the drowning rate was high, and parents got scared, and they really, like, Black families really safeguarded their kids and was like, don't be near the water. So that's got passed down generation after generation. But luckily, my parents put me in swim lessons at a young age. And yeah, I started getting heavily into it, and I just kind of took to it. And I hired my coach, Jonathan Karen, after a few years when I got more familiar with the sport. And he coaches a lot of the top professionals in the world. And he totally transformed me. Like, I didn't know people trained twice a day every day. And I know people were riding 100 miles on the weekend and doing brick workouts and all this stuff. So, as I worked with him, I started getting on the podium as an age group, as an amateur, and I started showing promise of being able to qualify for my pro card. And that's what we worked towards. And I told him when at the time, because there hadn't been a pro Black woman before, I'm like, that's my goal. Like, I want to bring attention to some of these statistics. And, you know, maybe if somebody sees my story, they'll want to enroll their kids in swim lessons. And that's how I went after it. And I eventually got my pro card.
When did you get your pro card?
In 2021. So
oh, wow.
I was close to it in 2019, but I had a really horrific cycling accident, which I'm sure you've seen the photos. It's gone viral.
Yeah. No wonder your parents were happy to just see you running.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. That was one of the worst, other than the whole breakup thing. Probably the second worst thing that's ever happened to me was that accident. I fractured my nose. I've had to go through a lot of plastic surgery. I had to get 30 stitches in my face. I knocked my teeth loose. I had horrible road rash. I had to temporarily move in with my parents until I could take care of myself again. But once I healed back from that, I got fit pretty fast. And then the pandemic happened in 2020.
Right.
Finally, things opened again in 2021. And in 2021, I did a half Ironman, and I came in top three amateur, which qualified for me for my pro card.
That's incredible. I mean, that's like a, you know, 8-year journey or whatever from when you first did your first triathlon, including like this horrific, you know, crash. I feel like that's enough to, like, most people would be like, I don't need to do that again, you know, and yet you came back and
qualified. Don't be fooled. I did say that when I saw what I looked like. I mean, you know, I was knocked out. So I woke up in the ER and I actually had doctors standing over me, surgeons. And I'm like, let me see what's it. And they're like, no, you don't want to see what you look like. I'm like, give me my phone. You know, I did the whole camera flip so I could see what I look like. And I was like, oh my gosh, I quit. Yeah, I'm done. Never, ever.
Right. Again.
Yeah.
Yeah. What made you decide to get back out there?
The second day, so I flew from the hospital in Texas to my parents, and the first major thing my dad said to me was something to the effect of, if you knew all this was going to happen, like, you would have a horrific accident, you would never look the same again, but you'd go on to become the first Black woman to turn pro in the sport, would it be worth it? Would you be willing to pay this price? And I didn't even hesitate. It was like, yes. This would be worth it to me, and I would go through this. And that was kind of when I started thinking, right, I'm not done yet. Like, this isn't it. And then because the accident was so bad, I had a blog at the time. This was back before, like, YouTube,
right.
Blogging.
Yes.
I was blogging, and I had a little bit of a following. And I posted the pictures from my accident. And it was, I didn't realize how many people were actually following along or cared, because honestly, when I saw what I looked like, I'm like, is representation really important? Who cares if there's a Black woman in the pro field doing triathlons and stuff? So I started questioning things myself. But when I posted those pictures, it got out there, it kind of went viral, and I got a lot of cards, especially from young Black girls, and I still have them all. And it was like, they were cute, you know, they drew little Black girl figures, and like, go Sika, like, good luck, feel better. And I'm like, oh, wow, you know, people really care, this is important, representation is important. And yeah, so I'd say 2 days after my accident, I was like, I'm coming back. And I did, actually. 5 months later, I did Ironman 70.3 Eagle Man. So that was my first race.
Wow. That seems so quick after.
Was crazy.
Yeah. But it must have felt so good and redemptive.
It felt good to get back, but also I'm very hard on myself. So I had actually needed to come in top three amateur overall that day. And I came in sixth, and I missed it by like 3 minutes. So of course, when I crossed the finish line, I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm not built for this, and you know, all that stuff. But now looking back, I can actually say with confidence that that is one of the most courageous things actually I've ever done.
Yeah, definitely. We are always our own worst critics. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter what kind of amazing things we do, we're always going to see the flaw and the where we could have done better. And, oh, if I hadn't, you know, stopped for that 1 minute, you know, yes, or whatever, you know, you always pick it apart.
Yeah. Especially women, that tends to be the case.
Yeah. I think we're kind of indoctrinated to aim for perfection and always, you know, blame ourselves or pick ourselves apart. So, yeah, a lot of times we can see it in others. Like when I, you know, hear that you came back and you did that sixth place finish like 5 months after this accident, I'm just like, that's incredible, you know? And so sometimes it's so hard to see that ourselves.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, it literally took, I think, probably at least 6 months or something for me to look back and be like, oh, wow, that was pretty freaking crazy.
Yeah, totally. You said something earlier and we were kind of talking about that, and I thought that it was interesting. You mentioned, you know, statistic about, you know, African Americans are normally not in the swimming scene, you know, and that has roots back to segregation. And then, like, that was part of you getting into triathlon. And then I see this interesting full circle that you just did the Selma to Montgomery protesting segregation. Like, how does that feel to you? Like, you know, to be making these connections, like how you're changing the narrative in triathlon, you know, and like also, you know, bringing awareness to all of the things that your ancestors had to go through. Like, I'm just curious, like, about that.
I don't know if I have an answer. I'm not even sure I was able to string all that together till you just said it out loud. I'm not sure why that drives me so much. I'm assuming my childhood. I think, as I said earlier, most people look at these things as so long ago, but I grew up listening to, you know, my dad and my grandpa and my parents speaking. And my dad grew up in Harlem in New York City, and, you know, during a time when it wasn't segregated up there, but he had family in the South. So he would tell me how he'd have to get on the train to go down south to Alabama to go visit family. And once he got to a certain point, where segregation was, he had to get off the train and then go on the back of the train. And like, I'm not talking about my great grandpa or, you know, this is my dad.
Right.
So yeah. I think hearing those things growing up, listening to the stories, even my grandpa saying that he thought he'd never see the day when blacks could play professional sports, you know, I'm like, well, I want to get my pro card in this sport that traditionally hasn't had a black woman before. And so I think it's just like innate now. It's just something in my subconscious from hearing those stories and being part of those conversations as a child.
Definitely. I think we're shaped a lot by the family stories and the histories that we're told. Like, even if we're not told it directly, we absorb it.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did your grandfather, was he around to see you get your pro card?
No, unfortunately. He passed away when I was 11.
Okay.
So a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I always say to my dad, I'm like, what do you think grandpa would be thinking now? And he actually said this past weekend too, out of all the things I've done, even triathlons and stuff, he's like, yeah, this one would have been right up your grandpa's alley. He would have loved every minute of it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's certain things I've done that I wish, you know, my dad would have been around to see and things like that. And I think that there is, I don't know, there's something poignant about, you know, fulfilling something that your parents or your grandparents were not able to do, even if they're not there to see it.
Yeah. 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 It's like, oh, how lucky are we that we have the opportunity to be able to do it because they weren't able to.
Definitely. So I'd like to kind of come back to the triathlon and the FKT a little bit, back up to, you said at the very, very beginning, you've done 100K before.
Yes.
So this wasn't your first time running 50 miles.
Yeah.
But you're predominantly a triathlete. So what was your training like? How did you pivot your triathlon training? And I think before we started recording, you were telling me you recovered really rapidly from this. You know, kind of how did you pivot your standard triathlon training and into this FKT? And maybe how did that compare to how you did your 100K training last year.
Yeah, it was like night and day, because when I was training for the 100K, I had already done, I was racing as a pro. I did three Ironman 70.3s heading into that 100K. So I had a huge aerobic base. My run mileage wasn't that high at all. People would be surprised, but I was cycling a lot and I was in the pool a lot. And my run mileage wasn't anything crazy at all. This time though, I focus a lot more on running. I'm taking a break from triathlon and I focus solely on this event. So I actually ran a lot more this time. Like, I was hitting 60 mile weeks pretty regularly. I maxed out at 70. And we also found that I do better from doubles instead of really, really long runs. Like, I talked to some people who are like, oh, I do a 30 mile run heading into an ultra or whatever. My longest was 22 miles. And before, I think the other one that I had done, I had maxed out at like 26 or something. But yeah, no, this one, the runs weren't as long, but they were a lot more frequent. And I cut back on the swim and the bike to focus more on the run. So I felt a lot more prepared this time from all the mileage on my feet. Yeah, I didn't feel as beat up. And this was also a lot different. The 100K I did was Pancake Flat. It was nearby in Chesapeake, Virginia. So I got to sleep in my own bed and everything. This one, I flew there, you know, hotel, food on the road, everything like that. So yeah, the 100K, I would say mentally heading in, it was easier. I trained on those roads this time. This is my first time running out there. And I didn't, it was hard to prepare exactly for that course.
Yeah. Sight unseen. Just show up and run.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's a good thing. My mom was like, oh, let's drive the course the day before. Nope, I don't want to see it. I will wait till the day of. I don't want to know, you know. Like,
right.
I knew people had told me about the hills, especially between 21 and 31. And so where I live at sea level, like an hour or 40 minutes north of Virginia Beach. And you have to drive far to even find a hill out here. So we did a lot of, I strength trained a lot with my fiance. And then also I did two hard bike workouts a week, like half Ironman type bike workouts. So they were big gear, hard strength training. And it does kind of mimic how you, the muscles that you have to recruit to get up a hill. So I think that helped too, some of the bike workouts. I would definitely say I'm not a traditional, I don't do traditional distance run training like other people do. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we mixed things up and had fun. I did a 5-time trial on the track, which I had done in forever heading in to see what my speed was like. I actually ran an 18:32. I was so proud of myself.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Thank you. Yeah. I was like, oh, I didn't know I had that type of speed. I didn't know I could run under 6-minute pace. And then also I went to, I did rock and roll. What was it? Rock and Roll Arizona the month before with my best friend. And I think I ran like a 126 there. So nothing too impressive, but it was very hilly there because we ran to Scottsdale and stuff. So that was a little fun shakeout workout. So yeah, I did some speed stuff heading in.
Yeah, it's good to mix it up and keep it interesting. Otherwise, you just burn out on training.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned you don't like to run super far because you do better with the double runs.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of my training is running, even though like my FKTs are hiking. But yeah, I also do doubles. Like, I don't like, you know, I used to run like, you know, yeah, oh, I'll go do a 30 mile run on the weekend. And I found myself like, it's far more effective if I just do two runs a day that are shorter.
Right. Yeah. Cause you start learning how to run on tired legs later and you don't feel as beat up.
Right.
Yeah. Like some people are hearing them. My friend, he also did this solo. He's the one that told me about it. There were only a handful of us. But yeah, he's like, I'm going to try to get in the 31 mile run before this. I'm like, oh my gosh, I would need a whole month to recover just from that. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Your recovery time is higher. And that's like one of the things I like about the doubles is you get that little mini window of recovery in between.
Yeah.
You know, you're not fully depleted. You know, you recover faster, so you have a higher output in all your training sessions. At least that's how it works for me.
Interestingly enough, Camille Herron also, I've known her for a few years, and she just did that Lululemon, the 6-day Ultra, and I was picking her brain also about how to prepare for this. And she was saying how she rarely does runs over, I want to say, 3 hours. She mostly does doubles also. So maybe there's something to it.
Definitely. I mean, it's all about finding what works for you, for sure. Yeah. So I like to wrap up with the highest high and lowest low of your FKT.
Well, I'll start with the low. It was like...
That's often easier to pinpoint. Yeah,
for several of them. Gosh, honestly, it was like around mile 47. I was hurting really bad. And that was the last time I knew I wouldn't see my parents again until the finish. So it was really hard too. I'm like, I had something to, you know, get towards. And I looked at every time I saw them as like recharging stations. So really the last 3 miles. And because so much of it was on US 80, I was just going straight. Just like looking straight. I didn't have to think. I didn't have to turn, nothing. But then once I got off the highway and I had to turn and think, and it was just a lot. So that was hard. I actually started walking around then. I wasn't even that far from the finish. And seeing the time slip away, I really wanted to get under 7 hours, and it was 7 hours and 6 minutes. And, you know, you start looking at your time, you're like, oh, I'm losing it, but there's nothing I can do about it. So that was a low for me, and the sun was coming out and I was baking. The high, the whole thing.
Yeah.
It was all amazing. Yeah. I wanted it hurt, but I didn't want it to end. I would say the high really came at the finish, seeing the state capital and making it there, but really like the first few hours after it, talking to everybody and hearing about the experiences and even how much my parents enjoyed it. Like, we all had a different perspective from the event. So it was so nice hearing what other people saw. Like, I might have missed certain landmarks, and some people told me about that. And then to see the attention now that the event is getting, you know, like, I was talking to the race director, and we didn't have like a traditional race where there's so many vendors and sponsors and all that. They didn't have any of that. So a lot of this is them just funding the bill, or just from what our registration fees. So now being able to share this with a broader community and hopefully get a little more attention and support from companies.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on the show today and sharing. It's been wonderful.
Yeah. Thanks for having me and letting me share the story and share some of the history about the event.
Thanks again, Sika, for coming on the show. You can read about her FKT on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow her adventures on Instagram at Sika Henry.